The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. Toward the end, we'll kind of continue on from our study yesterday on the coming new government. We're all anxiously anticipating that, particularly in this contentious political campaigning that goes on every 4 years, every 2 years, I guess, too, in the United States. But we'll focus more on just the labor that we're going to be putting in the world tomorrow. And, of course, Paul talks in Hebrews 4 about laboring spiritually to enter into this millennial rest. We'll look more at those scriptures in Hebrews 3 and 4. But first, some of the headlines. Yesterday, the New York Post published a bombshell revelation about a massive Biden family pay-for-play scandal. Now, we already know about Hunter Biden joining the board of a Ukrainian gas company called Burisma. That happened in early 2014. He joined the board for an eye-popping salary of $83,000 per month. That's already known. He joins the board even though he had no experience in the energy field. He didn't speak the Ukrainian language. He even admitted in an interview that he probably wouldn't have gotten the gig were it not for the fact that his father was vice president. That's on tape. So he's on the board for $83,000 per month as of early 2014. And his father at the time, as we well know, he was the vice president of the United States. And he was essentially Barack Obama's point man on all things Ukraine. He was running the show as far as U.S.-Ukrainian relations are concerned. So why would Burisma hire the vice president's son, the son that, as the New York Post brought out yesterday, has also been, well, he's had a lot of trouble with drugs and prostitutes and things of that nature. So why would they bring him on as a board member of Burisma? Well, the emails that were revealed in the New York Post article yesterday, they reveal why. Damning emails. This is from May 12th, 2014. And the email comes from Vadim Pozorowski. He's one of the advisors to the Burisma board. He's emailing Hunter Biden here, and he says, "We urgently need your advice on how you could use your influence to convey a message, a signal, to stop what we consider to be a politically motivated action." This was an email sent just a few weeks after Hunter Biden joined the board. Here's a Burisma board member saying to Hunter Biden, "We need your help. We need your influence. We need you to rescue us. We're coming under attack. What can you do for us?" This tells us why he was hired. Obviously, he was hired for his influence, for his political connections, because of his father. This was an urgent issue, according to the subject line of that email. The Post printed it in its entirety just yesterday. And then less than a year later, in April of 2015, this same Ukrainian official, or this same advisor to the Ukrainian board, or the Burisma board, Pozorowski, he sends another email thanking Hunter Biden for the opportunity that he had to meet with the vice president, Joe Biden. He says, "Dear Hunter," this is April 17th, 2015, "Dear Hunter, thank you for inviting me to D.C., and giving me an opportunity to meet your father and to spend some time together." So that was in April of 2015. And then less than a year after that email, we have the Vice President of the United States pressuring the Ukrainian government to fire a prosecutor by the name of Viktor Shokin, who was investigating Burisma. And then, as you well know, because we've played the clip before, Vice President Biden later, I think in 2018, he was boasting about this. Yeah, I went over to Ukraine and I told them, hey, you're not going to get this $1 billion of aid unless you fire Shokin. Here's what he said. This is from an interview in 2018, clip two.
And I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. Said, "Nah," I said, "I'm not going to. We're not going to give you the $1 billion." They said, "You have no authority. You're not the president." The president said, "I said, call him." I said, "I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion." I said, "You're not getting the billion. I'm going to be leaving here." And I think it was what, 6 hours. I looked. I said, "I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money." Got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
That's Joe Biden in 2018 boasting about demanding that Ukraine fire the prosecutor, looking into his son's company. They wouldn't get $1 billion unless they fired this man. Now, if you remember, going back to the sham impeachment earlier this year and the perfect phone call from July 25th last year, the whole sham was based on a supposed quid pro quo. President Trump telling Zelensky, if you remember, hey, you need to investigate into this Burisma Hunter Biden thing. And if you don't, well, really, there was no quid or quo, was there? There was nothing. There was nothing. There were all the press reports before the transcript was released, and the press just running wild, saying he demanded it. Trump demanded this. He demanded that and said he wouldn't get this if he didn't do this. And then the Trump administration just says, here's the transcript. Read it for yourself. It was a perfect phone call. Now you can see why, as the evidence begins to turn up, you can see why they went after Trump the way that they did over nothing. It's because he knew the truth. He knew what was going on. And Ukraine, of course, is the tip of the iceberg. There's another story out just today from the New York Post. Only the New York Post will cover it. The Times, the Washington Post, CNN, they're not interested. All of the money that came pouring in, not just from Ukraine, from China, says the New York Post this morning. And we know about Russia as well. The wire transfer, $3 million, I think it was, from the wife of the former mayor of Moscow. And then you've got all these connections to these shady Eastern European companies. Some of them involved in human trafficking and prostitution. Oh, yes, the Biden family connected to all of it. Here's the New York Post from yesterday. It says Hunter Biden introduced his father, then Vice President Joe Biden, to a top executive at a Ukrainian energy firm less than a year before the elder Biden pressured government officials in Ukraine into firing a prosecutor who is investigating the company, according to emails obtained by the Post. It says the blockbuster correspondence, which flies in the face of Joe Biden's claim that he's never spoken to my son about his overseas business dealings. He has made this claim over and over again. I've never talked to my son about any of his business dealings. Don't know anything about it. I just trusted him. I trusted that he knew what he was doing. Well, now we see that exposed as a blatant, audacious lie, and one that he's repeated over and over again. This is, I think, the Trump campaign that put out this montage of Joe Biden saying, you know, never discussed these business dealings at all with my son. Clip one.
I have never discussed with my son or my brother or anyone else anything having to do with their businesses, period.
I did anything wrong, and I didn't realize he was on the board till after it was after he'd been on the board, and at the same time, he has come forward and said it was a mistake on his part to be on the board.
I don't know what he was doing. I know he was on the board. I found out he was on the board after he was on the board, and that was it.
The fact is, I was unaware of his investments until it occurred, and I've never discussed what my son's business with him because I didn't want any conflict.
I don't discuss business with my son. I didn't know that was the case.
I've never spoken to my son about his overseas business dealings.
I've never discussed my business or their business, my son's or daughter's, and I've never discussed them.
Never discussed him, he said. And now we know from Pazarsky's emails that he requested for Hunter Biden to intervene, to do something. We're desperate. We need you. We urgently need you. We need your influence. He used the word influence. And then less than a year later, he thanked Hunter Biden. This is an advisor to the Burisma board. You may have already seen the picture. There was a picture not long ago with Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and then a board member from Burisma. They were out golfing or something like that. Now we've got the email, this advisor to the board saying, thank you, Hunter. Thank you for the opportunity that I had to meet Vice President Biden. And yet there he is on the montage. Don't know anything about it. Never known anything. Didn't even know he was on the board until, tell all of you people did. That's what he's saying. And you can imagine the camp is scrambling now. They shut down the campaign yesterday at 10 a.m. This is from the New York Post. It says the blockbuster correspondence is contained in a massive trove of data recovered from a laptop computer. This laptop computer, it was turned over to a computer repair shop in April of 2019, just last year. And it was never picked up. When you think about some of the statements my father's made about God upsetting their plan. Before the president, even just a few weeks before the president, he called Zelensky and said, you know what, you might want to look into this. Burisma, Hunter Biden, CrowdStrike, all of that. You just might want to look into this. No quid, no quo. And yet just a few weeks before that phone call, Hunter Biden or someone associated with him, he hands over the laptop to this computer repair shop, and then nobody picks it up. And the owner is he's continually trying to get a hold of Hunter Biden. Your computer is here. Everything's on it. The hard drive's not wiped or anything. And he's got all of these shady business dealings. He's got videos on there with prostitutes and showing him taking drugs. So the owner of this shop, he can't get a hold of the owner of the computer, and he knows there's all of this nefarious activity going on the computer. Turns it over to the FBI. What did the FBI do with it? Well, we don't know all the details there either. They're commenting and saying we can't really confirm or deny there's any kind of investigation going on. Just for a moment, let me just continue reading from the New York Post. It says, other material extracted from the computer includes a raunchy 12-minute video that appears to show Hunter, who's admitted struggling with addiction problems, smoking crack cocaine while engaged in a sex act with an unidentified woman, as well as numerous other sexually explicit images. Now, just for a moment, insert Donald Trump Jr. into the heart of this story and try to imagine how this story would have been covered yesterday, how it would have been treated yesterday. Because as it was completely smothered by the major media. And then you add to that social media doing its part to censor the story, to block tweets about the New York Post story. This is not some far right, you know, obscure website. This is the New York Post, founded by Alexander Hamilton. and Twitter and Facebook blocking it. Yeah, it's too dangerous. Now, the riots, those are mostly peaceful. But a story about Hunter Biden emailing these Ukrainian officials saying, we need your help. We need your influence. This is an urgent issue. We're coming under fire. We're being investigated. The company could go under. You've got to help us. How can you help us, Hunter Biden? Well, his dad happened to be the point man on all things Ukraine. And his dad went over there and he held $1 billion out there and said, if you don't fire Shokin, Shokin was investigating Burisma. Shokin was investigating Hunter Biden's company. This is a quid pro quo, if ever there was one. Why would the media immediately smother this story? Well, it's pretty obvious. The Post says the customer who brought in the water-damaged MacBook Pro for repair never paid for the service or retrieved it, or a hard drive on which its contents were stored, according to the shop owner, who said he tried repeatedly to contact the client. Further on, it says, Pazarsky said that the representatives of new authorities in power, this is just giving you some of the background that led up to, we need your influence. This is all from the email. Pazarsky said the, quote, representatives of new authorities in power tend to quite aggressively approach NZ unofficially with the aim to obtain cash from him. NZ isn't identified, the Post says in the email, but appears to be a reference to Burisma founder Mykola Zlochevsky, whose first name is a Ukrainian version of Nicholas. When the alleged shakedown failed, they, quote, proceeded with concrete actions in the form of one or more pretrial proceedings, Pazarsky wrote. We urgently need your advice, and this comes to the key quote here, we urgently need your advice on how you could use your influence to convey a message, a signal, to stop what we consider to be politically motivated actions. The Post says Hunter Biden responded by saying he was with Archer, that's his business partner, he was with his business partner in Doha, and asked for more information about the formal, if any, accusations being made against Burisma. Who is ultimately behind these attacks on the company? Who is the current interim government? Who in the current interim government could put an end to such attacks? That's Hunter Biden asking this advisor to the board. Who's behind it and who can put an end to it? As it turns out, his dad could put an end to it. His dad could stop the investigation. His dad could go into Kiev. He did it 12, 13 times, as you heard on that clip. And that last time, early on in 2016, he held up $1 billion in aid until they fired Shokin. The Post says here the exchange came the same day that Burisma announced it had expanded its board of directors by adding Hunter Biden. Burisma announces that it added Hunter Biden and immediately, now I think he was actually hired a few weeks earlier, but on the same day they announced that they added him to the board, they then say, we have an urgent issue. We need your influence. That's why he was hired. That's why he was hired in the first place. And Hunter Biden admitted as much in that interview several months ago when he told the interviewer, yeah, if not for my dad being vice president, I probably wouldn't have gotten any of these jobs. So they're out there admitting it. You have the vice president, the former vice president, boasting about the quid pro quo. And nothing happens. Nothing happens. Where would any of this be were it not for the Trump administration? The FBI, maybe the FBI is investigating it. Who knows? It says here, Let me just back up. The exchange came the same day that Burisma announced it had expanded its board of directors by adding Hunter Biden, who was put in charge of its legal unit and will provide support for the company among international organizations, according to a news release that's since been scrubbed from Burisma's website. So people have wondered, why did he get hired? What was his contribution? Well, early on it said he's in charge of the legal unit for Burisma. And then later that's erased. And now the company says, no, it wasn't for that reason. You see, the cover-up immediately sets in. As soon as someone starts asking questions, as soon as someone suggests that, hey, this doesn't seem right, surely, if nothing else, it's a conflict of interest. Now we're seeing it's much, much worse than that. Quid pro quo. The New York Post says, in addition to denying that he's spoken to Hunter Biden about his overseas business dealings, Joe Biden has repeatedly denied any conflict of interest or wrongdoing by either of them involving Burisma. See, he was doing everything right. Remember the clip I played a week ago? The reporter that says, you know, doesn't this look kind of bad, though, with your son? Hey, listen, if you want to talk about corrupt children, you go and look into President Trump's children. Look into Don Jr. Well, let's talk about Don Jr. You insert him into this New York Post story, and you would never stop hearing about it. You would hear about this from now on indefinitely. It's pretty amazing. Well, the Post goes on and talks about how defensive Joe Biden has been out on the campaign trail. He was confronted by one reporter and got a little testy with her. And then there was the individual at one of his campaign rallies that said, well, you're enriching your son and your family with your influence, with your government influence. And Joe Biden called him a liar. Said he was fat, challenged him to a push-up duel. Pretty amazing. This is President Trump's reaction. He was in Iowa last night, I believe, just a few hours after the story broke. And here's what the president said, clip three.
We've just learned through explosive documents published by a very fine newspaper, the New York Post, that Joe Biden has been blatantly lying about his involvement in his son's corrupt business dealings. And this is a big smoking gun. The newly uncovered emails reveal that a top executive from the highly questionable Ukrainian company, it's an energy company, which paid Hunter at least $50,000 a month.
At least $50,000. Now we know it's more like $83,000. $83,000 a month. For what? Well, as that advisor of the board said, we need your influence. We need your help. We need you to intervene. How did Hunter intervene? Well, we now know because it's on tape. Here's what the president continued to say. Clip four.
The same Ukrainian energy executive even sent Hunter an email saying, quote, we urgently need your advice on how you could use your influence. In other words, Hunter was being paid for access to his vice president father, who was specifically put in charge of Ukraine and Russia.
Ukraine and Russia. Here's the collusion. So we've seen the very things that they've accused Donald Trump of, colluding with Russia, or a quid pro quo with Ukraine, is exactly what they themselves have done and are doing. A massive pay-for-play scandal. And as I say, this is just the tip of the iceberg. It's just the tip of the iceberg. Another story just today, I'll get to it if I have time, talking about the dealings with these shady companies in China. Communist China! That's in the New York Post today. How much play do you think that will get? How much coverage will that story get? Here's President Trump again from last night, clip five.
These emails show that Biden's repeated claim that he has never spoken to Hunter about his business dealings were a complete lie. It was a total lie. He lied to you over and over because he's trying to cover up a massive pay-for-play scandal at the heart of his vice presidency. And everybody knows it. Everybody in Washington knows it. We've known it for a long time. The fact is, there was never an administration more corrupt than the Obama-Biden administration. There was never.
Never an administration more corrupt. But before that, he talks about this massive pay-for-play scandal that everybody in Washington knows about. They all know about it. A lot of people are involved in this. I think it was Lee Smith that wrote that article about how that it's the connections to China in particular, and the people make the people high up in U.S. government making millions and millions of dollars in the same way that Hunter Biden did. That's what's driving the resistance to Donald Trump, because he's exposing it. He's calling them out. He's telling the Ukrainian president, you know, you should look into this. There's some shady dealings going on here. He's exposing it. Here again is the president from last night, clip six.
Now we can see clearly that Biden is a corrupt politician who shouldn't even be allowed to run for the presidency.
He's completely right. A corrupt politician, and this is the opponent, the political opponent, the one running for president, the one that has a chance to win the presidency of the United States. Keep in mind the impeachment and what it revolved around just a few months ago. And then consider what has happened on the other side, what they've actually done, the actual quid pro quo, the actual abuse of power. A high government official enriching his family, even as he sells out his nation. And then there he is. There he is. He's the Democrat front runner. He's the one out front. Here's clip seven.
The Biden family treated the vice presidency as a for-profit corporation flying around the globe, collecting millions of dollars from China and Ukraine and Russia and other countries. In fact, the wife of the mayor of Moscow gave Hunter Biden a check for $3.5 million in cash while his father gave away the store to Russia, including Crimea. Remember Crimea? The Bidens got rich while America got robbed.
Total exposure. And it's all over the world. Russia, China, Ukraine. Here's the New York Post story from this morning. This is just breaking news from about an hour or two ago. It says Hunter Biden pursued lucrative deals involving China's largest private energy company, including one that he said would be interesting for me and my family. This is in the emails. On the hard drive, from the computer, dropped off at the computer shop, and then left there. Another email sent by Biden as part of an August 2, 2017 chain involved a deal he struck with the since-vanished chairman of CEFC, Yi Jianming, for half ownership of a holding company that was expected to provide Biden with more than $10 million per year. $10 million a year. For what? It says Yi, who had ties to the Chinese military and intelligence service, hasn't been seen since being taken into custody by Chinese authorities in early 2018. So here's this CEO, this head of this company, this shady company. He disappears. This is one of Hunter Biden's business partners. $10 million a year deal. It says Biden wrote that Yi had sweetened the terms of an earlier three-year consulting contract with CEFC that was to pay him $10 million annually for introductions alone, whatever that means, just for introductions, selling his influence. It says the chairman changed the deal after we met in Miami to a much more lasting and lucrative arrangement to create a holding company 50% owned by ME and 50% owned by him, Biden wrote. According to a report on Biden's overseas business dealings released last month by Senator Ron Johnson and Senator Chuck Grassley, a company called Hudson West 3 opened a line of credit in September 2017. So these dealings are all over the place. It says credit cards issued against the account were used by Hunter, his uncle, James Biden, and James's wife, Sarah Biden, to purchase more than $100,000 worth of extravagant items, including airline tickets and multiple items at Apple Inc. stores, pharmacies, hotels, and restaurants. That's coming from the Senate report. And then the Post says here, the documents obtained by the Post also include an attorney engagement letter executed in September 2017 in which one of Yi's top lieutenants, former Hong Kong government official Chai Ping Patrick Ho, agreed to pay Biden a $1 million retainer for counsel to matters related to U.S. law and advice pertaining to the hiring and legal analysis of any U.S. law firm or lawyer. Listen to this. In December 2018, a Manhattan federal jury convicted Ho in two schemes to pay $3 million in bribes to high-ranking government officials in Africa for oil rights in Chad and lucrative business deals in Uganda. So this guy goes to jail for bribing people. This is one of Hunter Biden's business partners. This is someone that's giving money to Hunter Biden. So you have these people making bribes. If they're some obscure figure, I mean, the U.S. government goes right after them. But certainly not someone that's coming from the radical left. Certainly not someone from the deep state. Certainly not someone from the swamp. Why, that, I mean, in that case, pay for play, that's common. Why, this is how we do business. If you're powerful in government, you might as well make a lot of money off of it. You know, Donald Trump at his rally last night made the point that, look, my family's come into this office and we're losing money. Think about that. Think about that for a moment. Again, this is not a perfect president we're talking about. Far from it. But he's a man and his family, they've come in and they have made some sacrifices. They've given up certain business dealings because of their service to the country. That's quite a bit different when you look at the other side. The Clinton family, the Biden family, all of the Nancy Pelosi's family, these people that have enriched themselves because of the power of the position that they're in. This is what they're most hungry for. They're addicted to power. The president made this point last night. Here's clip 8.
If he wins, the radical left will be running the country. They're addicted to power. And God help us if they get it. We'll never be the same country, and we will never be able to recover.
Never be able to recover. My father's made points along the way about how far gone the country was, about where we would be right now at this moment had Hillary Clinton had won the election in 2016. So here are all these stunning revelations from yesterday, and the major media, as I say, covering it up, and then big tech, just appalling what they get away with routinely. Twitter and Facebook banning the article, blocking people from even linking to it, blocking the New York Post Twitter account, blocking Kayleigh McEnany's tweets. She's the White House spokesman. And Twitter says, you can't tweet that. Why? It's dangerous. It's unsafe. Facebook, they're right there with them. The Federalist said, big tech made big promises this summer with the biggest platform's leaders pledging under oath before congressional lawmakers in July Their platforms would refrain from engaging in election interference on behalf of Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. They all promised under oath. They all said, look, we're going to rise above the fray. We're going to be objective. You're going to be able to do whatever you need to do on both sides. And now look, and by the way, why, if Joe Biden is ahead by 18 percentage points, why would they be, why would there be this concerted effort to try to blot it out, this story? What's the big deal? Okay, so he's involved in all these shady business dealings. But look, Biden has this in the bag. He's ahead by 18%. They're worried, aren't they? Of course they're worried. They're trying to help their favored candidate. Jack Dorsey, he's the head of Twitter. He came out with a statement last night. Our communication around our actions on the New York Post article was not great. And blocking URL sharing via tweet or DM with zero context as to why we're blocking it, that's unacceptable. So basically, he's sorry for blocking the story because he should have explained it more. He's not sorry that he blocked it. He's sorry that we didn't give it more context as to why we blocked it. Oh, okay. Now we understand. They want to blot it out. And so you've got the media in your back pocket. You've got big tech. You've got academia. You've got Hollywood. You've got the swamp. You've got the administrative state. You've got the deep state. All that's missing is President Hillary Clinton. That's it. That's it. Now, what will be next? As I say, it's just the tip of the iceberg. The Post had the big reveal yesterday morning, and then today about all these China connections. And you wonder if this will continue now for the next 3 weeks, right up to the election. An October surprise revealed by Donald Trump, Rudy Giuliani. He's the one, by the way, that got a copy of what was on the hard drive. And so, but for President Trump and a few of his close supporters, his close advisors, none of this would ever see the light of day. None of it. I thought it was interesting, the comment in the Post article about the FBI getting the laptop last year, and then they couldn't even comment on whether there's an investigation into Hunter. We don't even know if there... Where is Lieutenant Colonel Vindman when you need him? Where are the whistleblowers? It takes Rudy Giuliani and this shop owner for this to be made known. The FBI, if they have the content, well, who knows what they're doing with it? We don't even know if there's an investigation. And yet you compare this to the phone call, and all of the people called forward to testify. Oh, yeah, I heard. I just didn't like the tone of that phone call. President Trump releases the transcript, and there you go. There's nothing there. Nothing. God keeps upsetting their plan. He certainly does. Well, I've got a few other clips here that I really don't have much time to play. Well, let me just play these. These are from, talk about a sharp turn from what I'm just discussing there. This is from Governor Andrew Cuomo, and I don't think he was expecting this phone conference to be made public, but he's talking here about the lockdowns and how they've responded or reacted to COVID-19. Listen to clip 9.
I don't disagree with you. And look, I'm 100% frank and candid. This is not a highly nuanced, sophisticated response. This is a fear-driven response. You know, this is not a policy being written by a scalpel. This is a policy being cut by a hatchet. It's just a very blunt. I didn't propose this, you know. It was proposed by the mayor in the city. I'm trying to sharpen it and make it better. But it's out of fear. People see the numbers going up. Close everything. It's not the best way to do it, but it is a fear-driven response. The virus scares people.
It's not the best way to do it. I'm speaking candidly. Look, I'm going to be open with you here. This is not the best approach, locking everything down. But people are scared. Why are they scared? Because of you. Because of your allies in the media. They're scared to death. So lock it down. Close everything. Close everything, he says. I'll admit it's not the best way to approach this. But, you know, it's a fear-driven response. That's quite an admission. Coming from the governor of one of the biggest states in the union, population-wise. And, of course, we know all about New York and the approach that they've taken and the harm that's brought. The devastation that it's caused. The cure worse than the disease. Here's one more clip from that conversation, clip 10.
Hopefully, we get the numbers down in the zip codes. The anxiety comes down, and then we can have a smarter, more tailored approach. Your point is right. Why close every school? Why don't you test the schools and close the ones that have a problem? I know. But first, I don't know that we have the resources to do that now. But I can tell you honestly, the fear is too high to do anything other than let's do everything we can to get the infection rate down now, close the doors, close the windows.
Complete lockdown. The fear, you know, the fear is just too high. Maybe when the numbers come down, we can do something smarter. Right now, though, close the windows, close the doors, shut everything down. It's cases. Cases, keep in mind. Those keep going up. There's more cases of COVID. So shut it down, he says. It's always fascinating, isn't it? And very revealing to see what they say, to see how they think when they think that the mic is off. When they think that they're away from the cameras, you think about those Pennsylvania officials that admitted as they put their face masks on right before they got up at the press conference that it was just some political theater. It's all for show. There's the governor of New York admitting, you know, it's not the best response. It's not really the way to approach this. And maybe when the cases come down, we can do something smarter. Until then, though, shut it down. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM. And this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A new government is coming. That's the latest Trumpet magazine, straight from the cover of our recent Trumpet. And when that government arrives, well, it certainly will have its work cut out for it. The world tomorrow, we just celebrated a vision of the world of tomorrow at the Feast of Tabernacles. But what a time of hard work and productivity. God's preparing us, those of us in the church, he's preparing us for that calling. We're working to that end. Notice a few verses here before we conclude in Hebrews 3 and 4. It says in verse 10 of chapter 3, "Wherefore I was grieved with that generation and said, they do always err in their heart, and they have not known my ways, God says. So I swear in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest." The word for rest there in the Greek, it means to cease from labor or physical rest. And we know with ancient Israel, they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years before then finally, of course, it was the next generation that entered into the promised land. For ancient Israel, this rest that Paul writes of here was from the daily trials and tests experienced in the wilderness. Down in verse 17, it says, "But with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness? And to whom swear he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believe not?" Ancient Israel, you see, they bogged down in the wilderness. And what are we to learn from this history? What's the lesson that Paul wants us to take away from this? Well, continue reading in Hebrews 4, verse 1. It says, Let us therefore, lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. Let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, that any of us should fall short of it. We don't want to lose out. We don't want to bog down in the wilderness like they did in ancient Israel. We want to make it all the way through to God's kingdom, to the promised land, spiritually speaking. Verse 2, it says, "For unto us was the gospel preached, as well as unto them, but the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it." This is an ingredient that only God can add. He didn't offer his spirit to ancient Israel, except for the leaders. But today it's different, and faith is a fruit of the Holy Spirit. And if you're converted to the truth, if you've repented of sin, if you've turned to God in repentance and faith and have been baptized and received the Holy Spirit of God, then the very faith of Jesus Christ can dwell in our hearts and minds. Verse 3 in Moffat, it says, "For we do enter the rest by our faith, according to his word, as I swore in my anger, they shall never enter my rest, although his works were all over by the foundation of the world." So here again, Paul draws attention to the spiritual rest that we will experience in God's kingdom. Verse 4, it says, "For he spoke in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works." So this is the same Greek word used for rest, and it'll change here in just a moment. But Paul is certainly tying this into our Sabbath observance. You can see that back in Genesis chapter 2, God resting on the seventh day. And the weekly Sabbath, of course, points us back to that creation or that recreation of the surface of the earth. But it also, the Sabbath each week also points us forward to God's kingdom. And so the whole pattern for God's little understood plan, it was established in the first two chapters of Genesis. The whole pattern was set there. The Sabbath day is a type of the kingdom of God. It's a type of God's coming kingdom, this new government. God's family government. Down in verse 8, it says, "For if Joshua had given them rest, then would he not afterward have spoken of another day?" What is this really pointing to? What is this history really for? Well, read for yourself in 1 Corinthians 10. Paul says there that it's for us today. It's for our day. It's for the last days. Now, verse 9, it says, There remains, therefore, a rest to the people of God. Now, here it's a different Greek word than the one we've been focusing on. That means a rest from labor. Here, the Greek word for rest is sabbatismos, and it means keeping the Sabbath. Keeping the Sabbath. This is New Testament. This is the book of Hebrews. Verse 10 says, "For he that has entered into his rest, he also has ceased from his own works, as God did from his. Let us labor," verse 11 says, "let us labor therefore to enter into that rest, lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief." Labor, work hard. The word means to strive, to make an effort to keep the Sabbath. Work hard spiritually so that you can enter into this rest, so that you can be born into God's family. Let me just read verse 11 again. It says, actually, this is over in Exodus. Notice Exodus 20 in verse 8. It says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work. For in 6 days the Eternal made heaven and earth and sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day." So God ties it right to Genesis 1 and 2. As I said, the whole pattern was set there. The Sabbath command takes us right back to creation, but it also points us forward. Notice this quote from the Wonderful World Tomorrow book. Mr. Armstrong writes, "So in other words, the first 6,000 years were allotted to allow Satan to labor at his work of deceiving the world, followed by 1,000 years, one millennial day, when Satan shall not be allowed to do any of his work of deception." It says, put another way, God marked out 6 millennial days to allow man to indulge in the spiritual labor of sin, followed by a millennial spiritual rest under the enforced government of God. So the millennial rest that the Bible speaks of, it's not talking about rest from work, not at all. It's talking about a rest from sin. And what a refreshing rest that will be when all of the work, when all of the productivity, when all of the campaigning, when all of the education, when all of the government programs will be there to further God's purpose and to actually serve humanity. The way the world views rest today, of course, is, well, idleness and ease. Paul said in 2 Timothy that we were lovers of pleasures. We want a perpetual vacation. In fact, God's family is aiming for the job of a lifetime, for eternity. We're going to be supporting God and his work. We're going to be doing the work of God in a world, in a universe free from sin. The World Tomorrow book says again, "True enough, we find the accelerating intervention and production of intricate mechanical devices." Well, Mr. Armstrong's just writing here about how that we have all of these labor-saving devices, but look at what we're doing with our additional time, or with the time that it frees up. He says, we're degenerating. This is from a World Tomorrow program. "We're degenerating so fast that you just can't see it, and nobody will believe it, because we like to kid ourselves and be deceived into thinking we're getting better and better. You only get better," said Mr. Armstrong. "You only get better and better when you work at it. You've got to work at it." This should be common sense. If you're trying to learn how to play an instrument or sing or whatever, the only way that you're going to get better is by working at it. And so when you think about the coming world tomorrow and the generations of improvement and growth Think about the society that will soon build for God. There's going to be a whole lot of work at the outset just to clean everything up. But when you think about the years ahead, the years into God's kingdom, and the fruitful and productive work and what it will produce, what a wonderful world it will be under the new government that's coming, the government of God. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.